Welcome to the Deep Dive. If you've ever sort of scratched your head wondering why getting new technology into schools feels, well, almost like a political campaign, today we're really diving into a big part of the answer, the Technology Steering Committee. Our mission here is to unpack what this group actually does, yes, but maybe more importantly, why it even exists, and how it acts as this crucial operational firewall for school leaders. We're getting into the weeds of some pretty high-stakes ed tech decision-making.
Yeah, and I think it's really necessary context to start with the administrator's perspective, the burden they carry. You know, these are licensed professionals hired by the school board. They have the ultimate responsibility for making policies and decisions happen across the district.
Yeah.
But the sources we looked at make this really critical point. The effective administrators, they know they can't possibly have all the expertise needed to make every single tech decision wisely on their own.
Okay, so the person with the actual power, the one signing the check, knows they shouldn't be the only one deciding. But if that's true, why not just, you know, hand it off to the IT department? Let them buy the stuff. Doesn't that just kick the political can down the road?
But that's exactly where this steering committee really proves its worth. See, the administrator's job means constantly setting limits. Limits on what tech gets bought, limits on hiring more staff to support it, and crucially, resolving these disagreements when different groups want different things prioritized.
Yeah.
If you've got teachers saying we need X, IT saying we need Y to support X, and the budget office saying there's no money for either, well, all those conflicts land right at the administrator's feet.
Yeah, that sounds like a recipe for constant gridlock, a guaranteed conflict loop, like you said. So how do leaders actually navigate that, these really intense, often opposing demands, without everything just grinding to a halt?
Well, the main reason, the primary driver for even having this committee, is conflict reduction. Or maybe conflict synthesis is a better term. You absolutely need a dedicated kind of safe space to hammer out the differences between what teachers are asking for, what the tech folks know is necessary for stability, and, you know, what the budget and existing policies actually allow.
Yeah.
That structure, that process. That's really what we mean when we talk about the operational firewall.
An operational firewall. I like that framing. So the committee sort of absorbs the political friction. It filters all those competing demands before they hit the administrator's desk, making sure whatever gets recommended is actually, well, doable.
Exactly. It forces these different, often conflicting viewpoints to wrestle with each other and find some common ground, some kind of implementable solution.
Okay, so let's talk about who's actually on this committee. Who gets a seat at that table? Our sources really emphasize it needs to be a diverse group, you know, representing different parts of the school community. But what specific qualities are they looking for in a member beyond just being, say, a teacher or an IT person?
Yeah, good question. It's really about vision and operational intelligence. Committee members ideally are picked because they hold a strong kind of overarching vision for the whole organization, not just their own little corner of it. They're expected to have a pretty broad understanding of how the entire school or district operates. Because if you only see your piece of the puzzle, you can't really negotiate effectively for the whole system.
Right. So they're not just showing up with their department's wish list. They need to be genuinely interested in finding technologies that plug real gaps, whether those are gaps in teaching or gaps in how the whole place runs. They're basically solution finders.
And that shared vision, or at least the process of building it, is what makes the committee potentially work. It's that shared space where teachers, technicians, administrators, maybe even parents or students sometimes, actually sit down together. They hash out solutions that hopefully support everyone, or at least balance the needs. That's where the alignment has a chance to start.
That alignment piece leads us right into the core tension, doesn't it? Because the requirements from these different groups can seem, well, fundamentally at odds sometimes. Let's break down those demands. What are teachers, the folks actually using this stuff in the classroom, what are they looking for?
Teachers, yeah, they have some baseline needs, things that are pretty much non-negotiable if you want them to actually use the tech effectively.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, it absolutely has to be secure. It has to
right.
be reliable. It has to be robust. I mean, think about it. If the system is always crashing, or if it's vulnerable and puts student data at risk, it's worse than useless. It's actively harmful.
Totally. Reliability is table stakes. But that's just the start, right? Teachers also need the tech to let them and their students do specific things, tasks that are actually necessary for the curriculum, for learning. A rock-solid system that doesn't actually help teacher learn anything useful, that's just, you know, expensive furniture.
Exactly. Now, let's flip the coin. Look at the IT professionals. They're also driven by the same core mission supporting teaching and learning, but they absolutely view the world through a different lens, a lens of longevity, stability, manageability. They must insist that any new system aligns with good, sound principles of IT management. This is where they provide that crucial reality check.
And that reality check often boils down to things like capacity and expertise, doesn't it? Can we actually handle this thing?
Precisely. The IT team has to look at it and say, okay, can we actually support this new system with the people and the skills we have right now? You know, it's just not sustainable organizationally to bring in some super specialized piece of software if you don't have anyone on staff who knows how to fix it, update it, keep it secure 5 years down the line.
That really clarifies the conflict. We used that car analogy before, and it fits perfectly here, I think. The teacher might want the fastest, flashiest sports car, you know, packed with digital features to solve an immediate need they have, speed, performance. But the IT team, they have to step in and say, hold on, we need to buy a reliable fleet vehicle, something the existing mechanics in our garage actually know how to fix, something we can afford to maintain, get parts for easily. Otherwise, you end up hiring three new specialists in panics you can't afford, or the car sits broken in the garage. It's that constant tug of war, desired function versus operational reality.
And if you don't find a way to reconcile that tension, the whole initiative is likely to fail. It just fizzles out or becomes a constant headache. This is really where the committee does its hardest work. The real work is that simultaneous negotiation of what our sources call the DCI triad. That's appropriate design, proper configuration, and reasonable implementation.
Okay, let's pause on that DCI triad for a second, because that sounds like the core mechanism for getting it right. How does getting one of those wrong mess up the others? Can you give an example?
Sure. Think about it like this. You can have a system that's, let's say, reasonably implemented, meaning you did great training, the rollout seems smooth. But if the underlying design of the software itself is maybe just not built for a large school district, perhaps it can't handle thousands of kids logging in at once, then your smooth implementation doesn't matter. The system falls over.
Okay. And configuration, where does that fit?
Configuration is like the crucial link in the chain. You might pick the best design system out there, theoretically perfect. But if your IT team configures it poorly, maybe they set up the security permissions wrong, or it doesn't integrate properly with existing student databases, then the implementation, from the teacher's perspective, is going to feel chaotic and broken. So the committee's job is to constantly check that all three design, configuration, implementation are staying aligned throughout the whole process before the final recommendation goes up.
Which really means they aren't just picking a product off a shelf. They're vetting and approving a whole synchronized process for weaving that product into the school's daily life.
Okay, so we understand the players. We understand the intense negotiation that has to happen with this DCI triad. Now, for the payoff, right? What does success actually look like when a system improvement comes out of this process? If they manage to nail that DCI negotiation, what are the sort of ultimate criteria for a winning, truly sustainable outcome?
Right. The ultimate success, according to the framework in our sources, is defined by what we can call the MPS framework. Any resulting system, any improvement must be manageable, predictable, and sustainable. If it fundamentally fails on any one of those three, then the core organizational challenge hasn't actually been solved, even if the tech looks cool.
Okay, let's break those down. Manageable. What does that mean specifically in a school context? Is it just about IT workload? Manageable definitely includes workload, but it's broader. It refers to the overall operational burden. Crucially, it has to be within the existing technological capacity and expertise of the organization. So for instance, if your IT team is really skilled and certified in, say, a Windows environment, suddenly rolling out a critical new system that runs only on a niche Linux platform, that might not be manageable. It immediately strains your existing capacity, could lead to staff burnout, and almost guarantees more system downtime because nobody knows it well enough yet.
Got it. That's capacity. Predictable, though.
Yeah.
That sounds like it speaks much more directly to the user experience, the teachers.
It absolutely does. Predictability is just critical for teacher trust, for avoiding chaos in the classroom. If teachers can't reliably predict how the system will perform day to day, if it works perfectly on Tuesday, but then constantly glitches after a forced update on Wednesday morning, it completely disrupts teaching. And frankly, it just encourages teachers to give up and find workarounds. Predictability means it works reliably over time without nasty surprises.
Makes total sense. And the last one, sustainable. That sounds like the long-term budget reality check kicking in.
It definitely covers finance, but also scale. Sustainability essentially means, can we actually do this at the necessary scale across the whole district or school for the long haul? We're talking a minimum 3 to 5 year window, both financially and technically. You might manage to run an amazing, expensive pilot program in 3 classrooms for 1 year with a special grant. But if there's no realistic plan to scale that district-wide for 5 years without needing massive new budget lines every year or hiring a dozen new specialists you don't have, well, then it simply wasn't a sustainable solution from the start.
Wow, okay. That MPS framework, manageable, predictable, sustainable, ties it all together really nicely. It shows the committee's success isn't just about picking the tool with the fanciest features. Not at all. It's really about making sure that tool, however great it seems, actually fits the school's operational reality. The capacity, the need for predictability, the long-term scale, they're essentially acting as guardians of realistic long-term effectiveness, protecting the administrator and, ultimately, protecting instructional time.
That really is the ultimate aim, yes. This whole structure just confirms that EdTech decisions aren't simple purchases. They are complex organizational challenges. And effective administrators handle that complexity by deliberately setting up a process, the committee, to synthesize these diverse, often conflicting perspectives from teachers, from tech teams, from finance folks, to arrive at conclusions that are actually implementable and, crucially, sustainable. That's the key for the long haul.
It genuinely reframes how you think about school technology choices, doesn't it? It shifts it from just being about features to being about, well, smart organizational governance. So if that core challenge is really about balancing what people want with what the organization can realistically manage, predict, and sustain, here's a final thought for you listening. What specific organizational metrics should a school actually track? Maybe things like teacher retention related to tech frustration, or maybe unplanned IT maintenance costs, or even actual classroom usage rates beyond the first month to know if its steering committee is truly succeeding. Beyond just keeping the peace and reducing visible conflict. Something to consider based on the framework we've explored today